You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science, this week we are joined once again by expert Dr. Krishna McGovern. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And happy April Fools.
Yes.
We've got a lot of April Fools angled science stories today. April Fools in the world of science, a big holiday, it turns out.
Yeah, I was somewhat surprised. I thought, take inspiration from the day, I'll have a look. Mm. And so I'd known about a couple of things, but yeah, a lot more out there of, scientists playing pranks than I realised.
Yeah, and what kind of pranks are we dealing with here? What have we got on the agenda?
So first I thought I'd talk about CERN. CERN, it's not every year for the last sort of 10, 15 years, but pretty commonly they'll pull out an April Fool's prank, and they're kind of best read, but I'll talk about a couple of them now.
Mm.
So for anyone who doesn't know, CERN is the European Organization for Nuclear Research, and so if you say it in the French name, CERN makes sense as an
right.
acronym. And it's basically the largest particle physics lab in the world. So if you've ever heard of the Large Hadron Collider, which is how they found the Higgs boson,
yeah,
it's, there's 27-kilometre circumference tunnel under the ground between the French and Switzerland border. And so it's a big, serious physics place, right?
Yeah.
But each year they kind of like to have a bit of a joke.
Yeah, a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
What are some of these jokes?
So last year was their 70th anniversary, and so they made this big announcement that they were going to have a name change. They were going to become the Network of Experiments for Research and Developments in Society, because it truly encapsulated the true nature of the laboratory. Now, if you make the acronym for that, it's NERDS.
Oh, that's so, a good one.
Yeah. I felt it was much better than their 60th anniversary attempt, where they just basically said all official communication coming out of CERN was going to exclusively use the font of Comic Sans.
Ooh, that's a nice one.
Yeah, and if you read the article, it was very much attributing the success of the Higgs boson experiment and its release to the world because of the font.
It's a great success of the organisation.
Yeah. The other one that I found quite amusing was there's four fundamental forces, basically, in the world or in physics. It's the strong force, the weak force, the electromagnetic force, and gravity. These are the things that keep us running in the world as we know it. But in 2015, CERN announced they'd found the presence of the force.
Ooh.
Yes, the
exciting.
Star Wars force.
Right.
And so the quote is, "Very impressive, this result is," said a diminutive green spokesperson for the laboratory.
Ah, that's quite good.
And it was attributed to the CERN theorist Ben Kenobi. So yeah, they've done ones where they've also had found a Humpty Dumpty particle which glues everything together. They've had a space elevator accelerator, and such accurate measurement of the second that we would have an extra hour each day.
That's good.
If you've got some time, they are really
have
good to read.
The CERN stuff. Yeah, and what other April Fool's pranks are we seeing across science?
So my favourite is at the New Zealand example,
yeah.
which was in 2007 on a website called realclimate.org. Dr. You-Know-What of New Zealand's Institute of Veterinary Climatology.
And that's U-E-W-E,
yes,
right?
So it's,
yeah.
Yep, so it's U as in the sheep. Released their sheep albedo hypothesis. And basically what this was global warming wasn't due to the buildup of CO2 in the atmosphere at all.
Oh.
It was due to the decline in the New Zealand sheep population.
Naturally. And yeah. how do they make this link?
Right? So sheep tend to be white. White being really reflective. So if you have a large number of sheep, you increase the planetary albedo, and that's because what albedo is just the amount of sunlight that's reflected back into space. So if you have all these sheep around.
Lots of sheep, more albedo,
yeah.
right.
And so with the decreasing sheep population, the ground absorbs more radiation, warming the planet. And so what Dr. You-Know-What warned was obviously because the planet was becoming warmer, there's less demand for wool sweaters, so then there's going to be less demand for sheep, so you've got this feedback loop,
yeah.
so it's just going to get worse.
A self-perpetuating cycle.
Exactly. They referred to it as the runaway sheep albedo feedback.
Right.
Yes, and then just to keep the joke going a little bit longer, they had a quote from Steve Ramstuff, spokesperson for the New Zealand Sheep Farmers Guild, who was quoted as saying, Bah, humbug. No matter what goes wrong with the world, they're always trying to blame the poor New Zealand sheep farmer.
Ah, oh, that's classic.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff. Yeah. And have we got any more April Fools?
Yeah. So it turns out another organisation that likes an April Fool's joke is the BBC.
Mm.
So, you think all serious and stuff. Turns out not so, in the 70s
Once
and
a year.
60s,
yeah.
They like to have. So Sir David Attenborough, who we all know, love and trust.
Yes.
In 1975, on BBC Radio 3, he reported about this group of islands in the Pacific known as the Sheba Islands and played this recording of what he called a Musandrophilus, and it was a night-singing, yodeling tree mouse. And you can imagine it.
A yodeling tree mouse. Yeah. It sounds like a strange noise.
I tried to track down the recording, YouTube and stuff. I couldn't find it. But, had a lot of people going. Also described a web-footed species whose webs were prized by the island inhabitants for musical instruments.
Mm.
Yeah, it just made up these islands, made up some animals.
Didn't exist at all.
No. Another couple that were really interesting was 1976, a British astronomer, so an actual astronomer, Patrick Moore, he announced that there was going to be this extraordinary event happening at 9:47 a.m. exactly. And it was in relation to Earth, Pluto was going to line up directly behind Jupiter. And so because they were lined up, their gravity was going to affect us.
Ooh.
And if you jumped at 9:47, you'd feel weightless.
Right. That's exciting.
Yeah, right. So everyone's sitting there in his radio program, and he did yell jump now at 9:47. Yeah. And within minutes, the switchboard, because it's, the days of old with the switchboard, started going off, and people were going, yep, we're here. We floated around the room. The table came up and everything.
Wow.
Someone even asked for compensation because they hit their ceiling. And you're kind of going, okay, yep, rightio.
Everyone's playing along.
Yeah. And then in the same similar vein, there was Smell-O-Vision, which was in the 60s, where it was actually... It was based on something that actually exists. So a professor had actually invented technology for injecting seats in movie theatres with smells that would coincide with the soundtrack of your movie. So you would have this extra sense while you're watching. It was only ever used...
Extra sense?
It was only ever used in one movie called Scent of Mystery, a movie about a mystery novelist trying to prevent a heiress being killed. And it was a complete flop by the sounds of it. The Smell-O-Vision did not work well. But then what they did on BBC in 1965 was they had this professor come on TV and give this interview, and he's like, he has this little box, and he's like, yes, I have Smell-O-Vision where, the smells in the TV studio, you can smell at home because it basically breaks down the thing into its molecules that then get ejected through the TV set, and you've just got to stand about 6 feet away from the TV set and smell. And so then he put some coffee beans in and then let it sit for a little bit, and then he put some onions in, and then same thing. People started ringing in and going, yep, I smelt it. My eyes were watering.
It works perfectly. Interesting. I'm very amused, I guess, by the general population being so eager to play along with the bits.
Yeah. No, it is really. It's quite amazing. And then with the Smell-O-Vision, there was actually a psychologist who followed it up in the 70s who, on a smaller scale, also was just like a Manchester late news show in the evening, kind of did the same thing, but instead he just said it's like a pleasant country smell, so not manure, but and people rang in by smelling flowers, hay, grass. Two people said that they got such bad hay fever.
Wow.
you're like, so it's the power of suggestion.
Sort of placebo thing going
exactly,
on here.
Right. Like,
any more April Fools for us?
So the last one I'll mention is just one that got out of hand, which is, it's quite funny, and it's a little bit... It's biology kind of science adjacent. It's the Loch Ness Monster.
That's a classic.
It's a classic. So 1972, on March 31st, the day before April Fools, there was a team of scientists from the Yorkshire's Flamingo Park, and they're sitting down having breakfast in their hotel, and they were there basically on a joint mission with what was called the Loch Ness Phenomena Bureau, and they were there to prove the existence of old Nessie. Mm. And they had some... hormone that they were like, this is good bait, this will bring in Nessie. So they're sitting there eating their breakfast, and the hotel manager comes running over, and he's like, oh, we've just got a phone call. Someone's called in a tip. There's something floating in the lock just outside of the hotel. So they all race out, and they go, and there's a lump in the water. So they get in their boat, and they go, and they pull it back in, and they're like, we found it. it's dead, but we found it, you know, like...
The Loch Ness Monster. Loch Ness Monster. Yeah, wow.
And so they'd... it was the days of telegrams, so they got back to the director of their zoo and they're like, we found it, we found it. And he is quoted as saying, I've always been skeptical about the Loch Ness Monster, but this is definitely a monster, no doubt about it, no doubt about that. And so these scientists loaded it into their truck because they're taking it back to their zoo to look at it more. But they're from Yorkshire, which is in England, and the Scottish police at Inverness found out that these scientists were taking back this national treasure and weren't very happy about this. And so... So they were like, right, we have to stop them. The English aren't taking this. And so they incited the 1933 Act of Parliament, which prohibited the removal of unidentified creatures from the Loch Ness.
Wow.
Yeah.
That exists.
This was what I found amazing about this story. So they rang police in the next county saying, there's this truck coming. You've got to stop it. You've got to get
Yeah, you've got to protect the Loch Ness monster. Right.
So the cops stop this truck. The scientists do. They don't put up a fight. They're like... cooperating, but then the police are like, well, now what do we do with it? Okay, we need to find some scientists that can look at this. So they take it to the nearest town and they call around, and the Edinburgh Zoo sends its curator to have a look at this Loch Ness Monster. So he walks around it a couple of times, does a bit of poking at it, and I mean, yes, it's an elephant bull seal.
An elephant bull seal?
Yes, which comes from the South Atlantic Ocean, nowhere near the
lock. How does that get into the lock?
Well, there's also evidence that the seal had been frozen. So right. Can you see where this is going?
Yeah, I can imagine someone placed it there.
Yes, and it gets a little bit better because it was this man called Don Shields, who turns out was the Flamingo Park Zoo education officer. So this team of scientists, where they'd come from, their mate back at the zoo, who was the education officer,
so a pretty serious role,
had heard about this elephant bull seal that had died in another zoo, and he decided it was his opportunity to play a prank on his colleagues. And so he got it, he shaved off the whiskers, he packed the cheeks, and then he kept it frozen, and then he dropped it on March 31st, because that would mean then there were headlines on April 1st, which also was his birthday.
Oh, well, that's a nice birthday gift.
And it did happen. Like, there were definitely headlines saying it had been found. It was all very embarrassing. I don't think he kept his job for very long.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So that's an exciting story.
That is, eh? Like, it's got everything. A police chase and inciting an act from the 30s.
Yeah. I can't imagine, because obviously there's the issue of bringing the treasure outside of Scotland. How did he get the seal in? That's what I need to know, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go with under the cover of darkness.
Yeah, like, dragging a frozen seal around, surely a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, imagine if you had a car accident.
There's a lot of skepticism, I guess, that would come up. What are you doing with this frozen seal? Yeah. All right, well, thank you for sharing all these April Fool's pranks with us. Hopefully we've inspired some people out there, though maybe not too much. Keep away from the elephant seals. Maybe try the silly name pranks or something similar to that. All right, well, thank you for sharing these with us. Thank you, Moshe, as always, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.